top headlines.
Red Sox start playing actual baseball today down in Fort Myers. The Sox play both Northeastern and Boston College. J.D. Martinez had his physical yesterday. There's still some kind of delay with the medical records, so nothing officially official, as they say, just yet. John Heyman reporting that Martinez has a limited no-trade clause as part of his new contract. Celtics back at practice last night as they get ready for Detroit tomorrow night. Marcus Smart was on the court. He told reporters after the practice that a large piece of glass came very close to hitting a tendon in his hand, and if that's what ended up happening, Smart would have likely received season-ending surgery. Other NBA news, Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that Kawhi Leonard has been medically cleared to return, but so far has decided not to play for the Spurs. Bruins remain off tonight and tomorrow as they continue their five-game road trip in Toronto on Saturday night. According to Pierre LeBrun, the Bruins remain in the mix for Ryan McDonagh, but the price needs to drop. Drew Brees and the Saints will reportedly meet to talk about a new contract at the draft combine next week. Finally, USA women's hockey team won their first gold medal in 20 years, beating Canada in a shootout 3-2. And men's curling beat Canada this morning to earn their first shot at Olympic gold. Headlines are brought to you by the Pride Motor Group, Washington's birthday sales event. Presidential savings on all Chevy, Hyundai, and Kias on the Linway and Lynn, or visit PrideMotorGroup.com. I'm Nick Cattles. Headlines coming up, 12:30.
Stay connected to Boston sports.
Who do you root for?
Connect with Boston's home for sports online. 98.5thesportshub.com. Now, sports talk while you're on the clock. This is Zolak and Bertrand.
I'm going to slap you because you fake it.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Thirsty Thursday, Dan.
I'm thirsty. What do you got?
Yeah. You came ready to go today.
Yeah, a little smart
water.
A little
water, a little Gatorade.
A little G2 to
very
replenish.
Hydrated Roachy.
Had a nice fluids. Lunch. Are we thanking the people we had for lunch?
We are going to thank the
Look
people.
Look at you, Roach.
That delivered lunch today. That would be Deli After Dark.
Love your passion.
Located in Dedham Square. Now, they're not just open after dark. They're open all day long.
That's true.
Okay. You want to check this place out. Roachy, what'd you make at lunch today?
Pretty good. Chicken parm.
Excellent.
Solid chunks of chicken on the little pasta chicken and broccoli. Had that, too, to go with it. A little ziti. Tremendous.
High Street in Dedham. You can visit them on the web. TheDeliAfterDark.com is where you want to find them. Check out their menu. It's extensive.
I think Maz liked it. I've seen him take like 17 trips down the hallway.
I know. Yeah, Maz will tell you. Just protein. Just protein.
Just protein.
Yeah. But they delivered an excellent lunch here today. You want to check them out. Great local spot in Dedham. The Deli After Dark, thedeliafterdark.com. All right, Roachy, let's get back to some of the baseball conversation. What do you say?
I say, you know who was released at the age of 25 and then signed and over the next four seasons after that, averaged 43 home runs per year and added 10 more seasons after that, too, where he was almost a lock for 30 and 100?
You're going to say David Ortiz?
And you know what? In August of 2008, this player was traded from Pittsburgh to another team for a player to be named later. In September of 2009, he completely changed his swing and took off. As in his age 30 to 33 seasons, he averaged 38 home runs per year. J.D. Martinez is entering his age 30 to 33 seasons. Martinez changed his swing. Went from a ground ball hitter to hitting the ball in the air. His launch angle changed and it's worked. That's what I have to say about that. Do you know who that player was?
No.
Jose Bautista. So I don't know why the panic, the overall swarming of negativity, too, is around J.D. Martinez. And this sign, I don't...
Can I ask you a question?
Get it.
Can I ask you a question, please?
Get it, yes.
Why didn't nobody else in baseball want this guy?
I just don't know if it was the right fit for anybody else. Look at the...
Wait a minute.
Like,
a
30, Eric Hosmer...
And every year, 3,100 guy who averages how many home runs a year?
How about a first baseman who hits, you know, 25 home runs, drives in 80, plays good defense, and is a great team clubhouse guy? How many markets were there for Eric Hosmer, who ended up with an 8-144. It seemed the strange market that we saw this year really directed players and teams to one place. Scott Boras finally wised up and said, all right, he called Eric Hosmer. He said, Eric, we're going to get a deal done. San Diego's the only team that's interested in you. Do you want to get a deal done?
Did the Royals make an offer to Hosmer?
I don't even know.
I think I saw a report
that they did. I don't think it was anything legit.
So his team actually made offers and tried to keep him.
Well, but same with Arizona.
Arizona tried. The problem is
I don't know that I fully believe that.
Yeah, they just don't have the money.
Like
I
think that could have been, and you know what? The Royals could have been the same thing. A Scott Boras client who's got fake interest being drummed up that isn't really there.
I hate the idea.
Boras would not do that.
I hate...
Okay, Heyman. Okay, John Heyman.
The Kong of Slug or whatever the hell he called him at the beginning of the offseason.
And by the way, Boras wanted $200 million. For J.D. Martinez. Yeah. Remember that at the start of the offseason? He wanted to make him a $200 million player. That didn't happen.
He got a little more than half of that. Maybe he can be excited about that.
This is good. Great for the Red Sox, though. I mean,
oh, it's awesome. I hate the narrative. I cannot stand the narrative. I heard it yesterday when I was driving home. I cannot stand the narrative of, well, why did only one team want J.D. Martinez? Well, Mike Moustakas hit 38 home runs last year. He's still a free agent, folks.
Nobody wants him. Nobody wants Jake Arrieta.
Yeah, so, I mean, this was more about the rest of the league than it was about Martinez or the Red Sox. That's why the Red Sox could get Martinez for the deal that they got him for. It's pretty simple to me. Unless we're trying to find some kind of controversy out of nothing, I think it's pretty clear why Martinez was still available at the time he was and why there weren't a lot of teams going after him. It reminds me of when people were freaking out about the Red Sox not going after Giancarlo Stanton. Meanwhile, you have the Dodgers, who were right there to win the World Series last season. They didn't want to get involved on Giancarlo. Why? Because of money. People complained about the luxury tax last year by the Red Sox and not wanting to, you know, go above that and resetting the tax. Well, I've got news for those people. The Yankees are doing the same thing this year. The Dodgers are doing the same thing this year. Most of baseball is doing the same exact thing that the Red Sox did a year ago. So it's more about the league and the system and the market than it is about this team or the specific player.
And to me, I get it. I get, you know, okay, I understand the arguments on the other side, but crying out loud, the guy hasn't played a game yet in a Red Sox uniform, and people are just all over the Red Sox for this deal. And this, they ended up, you know, it sounds like there was $5 and $100 on the table the whole time. And at some point, like I mentioned earlier, Boras went to Hosmer first and said, do you want to get a deal done? Let's get a deal done. I think he went to Martinez and said, do you want to get a deal done? I'll get a deal done. Picked up the phone and worked it out. 110, yes. Opt out after 2, opt out after 3, limited no trade clause. Everything else fell into place. But I think he fit the Red Sox perfectly for what they need going forward here. They didn't have anybody to replace David Ortiz. And if you hear Mookie Betts and you hear some of these players, they maybe weren't able to replace a lot of David Ortiz, and it affected everybody else in that lineup. So they have a guy who's got a legitimate chance to do that, who's coming off a tremendous season, and at age 30, everyone's sitting there saying he'll never be able to do that again. Look at this. You know, he's Arizona, the humidor they're going to and everything. Fine. But if you look at his numbers, like the worst case scenario, just on paper that you're looking at, is 320 and 75. That's the worst case scenario that you're looking at right now with Martinez if you analyze his last 4 years since he changed his swing.
Well, Rochi, you know, for some people, it's easier to ask for forgiveness and say, I was wrong, than coming across as, God forbid, oh, you're a homer because you like something. I think that's part of it. Right? Yeah. If you like what teams do,
right,
you're a honk, you're a homer. You're not.
Well, I just ignore
you're not
that
fairly
now.
Looking at something right. And liking a deal. It's something else.
But here's my one thing that I will say. I'm not saying that it's a great deal, but he's never been
Cattles is scarred by Jones. It's so obvious.
He's never been a DH before.
He's shell shocked.
No, failure too.
He's shell shocked from working with Jones. No one's calling Rochi a homer here. No one's calling Rochi a honk.
We just
disagree about the player and right. What the consistency level will be.
Felger takes his shots. Felger takes his shots at some things too. So it's easier to be wrong and say, I was wrong, because that's endearing. Because people can pile on you. It's endearing.
You might look at J.D. Martinez and say, you know what? I'm not totally convinced of his track record.
Fine, but man, you don't have to go far to say to kill the signing. And this is where I agree with David Price. The air of negativity in this market is horrific right now around this baseball team.
And it doesn't mean that you have to kiss their ass about everything. full circle with the Patino stuff. And it doesn't mean that you have to kiss their ass. It's just,
no, but
you
know, I mean, the season hasn't started.
If he stinks, I'll be the first one in line to say, wow, he stinks, right? But I think when you look at the track record recently and what he's done and what this team needed and the deal that they got him for, that deal's a great deal for them.
I want to tell you what Alex Cora said earlier today.
The only caveat that I have is that he's got to learn a new position. That's my one
concern.
That's
not learning a new position to be a DH.
It's a lot different. Trust me. A lot different.
What?
Yes.
Where you only have to go bat and you don't play the field?
Yes. We can discuss that a little bit later on the other side of your break that you're trying to get to. Go ahead.
You have to learn a new position to go up and hit the baseball?
It's totally different than being an everyday player.
I would have held on to that comment until after the break.
All right, we'll discuss. Let's take a break.
All right, Alex Cora, what he said about the lineup going forward for the Red Sox.
What's the phone number?
And I want to get to an idea that we mentioned yesterday in takeaways and get Roach's take on.
What's the phone number?
Bringing up whoever the hell you want in the ninth inning.
Ugh.
The phone number is 617-779-0985.
Zolak and Bertrand.
Bertrand, you guys do a great job talking sports in the middle of the day.
That's what we try to do here on a sports station in the midday.
It's true.
98.5, the sports hub.
Alex Cora spoke today, talking about right-left balance in the Red Sox lineup.
Can I ask you a quick question? Can I interrupt?
Of course.
Can we have anybody, can we open up the phone lines?
Are you eating?
Yeah.
What are you eating?
617-779-0985.
Yeah.
Can we call people that agree about this Red Sox signing of J.D. Martinez, that it's not a bad thing? Can you just call? And all you have to do is, when Mark says, you know, Ken and Lowell, just say, I like the J.D. Martinez signing and hang up. That's all I want. I want somebody.
That's going to make you feel good?
Yeah.
A Roachy directive to the callers.
That's all.
I like that.
Okay. Go ahead.
Evan Trelick, NBC Sports Boston, wrote, at Fenway Park at least, there may be no need to implement silly mechanisms to increase pace of play. Alex Cora's vision for the Red Sox offense could speed us along. Oh, man. Every day, we find something new to love Alex Cora for.
Mm.
Really, every single day.
As Roachy calls him, AC.
AC.
Love him.
This guy is so much better than Farrell already, he hasn't even managed a single game.
No, hold on.
The team could go 500 this year. I'm still going to be saying, how great is it to have Alex Cora?
Best manager of all time.
The best ever. He's already passed Tito.
The GOAT.
The greatest modern manager in Red Sox history. He says, the Sox of yore strove to work counts for the sake of booting a starter out of the game early. A higher pitch count made it easier to get into the bullpen, attack the bullpen. That went on for years here. He says the difference now is manifold. For one, relievers are simply better. He says we used to wait them out. This is Cora today. But that was 10 years ago, 13 years ago. Cora said Thursday morning before the Red Sox played their first exhibition game of the spring. It's been a while. It's a different game. Had a conversation with Mikey Lowell about that. I was like, Mikey, the starters, they go 4 or 5 innings. They don't bring in the 87, 88 mile an hour cutter, sinker, breaking ball guy anymore. Now the guy in the sixth inning is 97 with a great off-speed pitch, secondary pitch. I'm a big believer. When you get to that starter, if you can get him right away, get him. Either he'll get you or you'll get him. Oh, boy.
It's kill or be killed.
This.
Yes.
Aggressive. Being aggressive. Now, on the left-right balance, he said it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You put the best lineup out there. I hate to bring up last year because I want to turn the page. But you saw what happened at the end. We have 5 righties in the Astros lineup in a row. It didn't matter. If you can hit, you can hit. They're good hitters throughout the minor leagues. You face lefties and righties. And all of a sudden, your first month in the big leagues, you can't hit lefties? I never got that. Probably have to make that decision later on, but it doesn't matter. We were talking off the air. Lefties come up into the majors. Platoon them, right?
Absolutely.
Traditional thought is, you're a lefty. You're going to struggle. We'll platoon you when you come up. He's saying, no matter what you are, right or left, when you're in the minors, you hit righties, you hit lefties. You're in the lineup every night. And then you get to the majors and you're told, no, you can't.
Yeah, and then
or
you
you're going to be put at a disadvantage.
Think about the word confidence. What we talked about.
Why
earlier.
Make that assumption?
Right.
Or why not let a guy work his way through it?
What does that
and
do
make
to your
the adjustment to the major league?
Yes,
and
part of the chess game.
If the manager's telling you through his actions that you can't hit lefties, now you start to think you can't hit lefties. Even if you've been hitting lefties your entire career up to that point, if you're getting pulled because that is how they value you on the team, then that could mess around with you a little bit. That can get into your head a little bit.
Not only
why
that,
don't
but,
they, you know...
Right. It could change your career.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had conversations with players about this, where they'd say, you know, all of a sudden you come up, and let's say you go 0 for 10 out of the shoot against left-handed pitchers, and you're a left-handed hitter, and then all of a sudden they platoon you. You could hit your whole life well against lefties, but then you could become that type of player where you're labeled for the rest of your career, like it or not, that he can only hit right-handed pitching.
Yep.
And that puts you in that lane. Look at Chris Young. You know, he's had a hard time, you know, and again, he's a little bit older, so there's at least some better numbers there to go up against it. But he's known as just a guy that can go up against left-handed pitching. That's the hard part. And everyone's saying that about, you know, should they platoon Moreland and Hanley? It doesn't sound like Corey's going to do it that way. He's going to do it pick and choose and what have you for the matchups and how they're feeling and things like that. So
doesn't this sort of represent a change in the Red Sox, though?
I think it represents a change in the game. I think it's what John Henry was trying to say the other day, but couldn't say it.
Well, I think it's both. I think he's talking about changes in the game with what he's talking about, where his starters are not what they used to be. And if you want to get to the bullpen, well, sometimes the bullpen isn't what you want to be going after. Because if you've got a good bullpen, which a lot of teams do, well, then that's going to be a problem. When you've got guys that are as good as they are coming out of the pen.
Right. If you're playing the Yankees, you want to get 3 runs off the starter, but let them go 6 or 7.
You want to sort of, right? Toe that line a little bit, right?
It used to be, you know, get to the Yankee starter, get as many pitches as you can, so get them out because they're going to get to Rivera some way, somehow. You know what I mean? So that bridge, the 7th, 8th. Now, you know, you get 4 innings out of Severino or 5, then you go to Chad Green, and it just doesn't stop. On and on it goes. All the way through Betances and all the way into, you know, the back end of the bullpen.
But I'm talking further about, you know, they were so obsessed with matchups and righties and what are the guys' splits. And you get to the point where now it just feels like his approach, Alex Cora's approach, is rather simplistic. The best hitters will hit.
Yep.
We will send them up to the plate. We will not sit there and look at pitches. We will try and hit the baseball. We're not going to be stupid on the base paths. This sort of goes against maybe the overuse of analytics and Carmine and everything that the Red Sox have done over the years. This feels, Alex Cora, okay, feels like a Dave Dombrowski manager to me. That's what he feels like. Even though he may not have been Dombrowski's guy, he may have been ownership's guy, it feels like his approach is sort of simple, and I like that about him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like when he, you know, talk about base running. Last year, they're throwing it into the fans' face saying, well, you know, we just got to be aggressive. So there is a line, though. You need to be aggressive, but you don't have to be stupid. And so many of those decisions made on the base paths last year, they were dumb, running into outs over and over and over again, getting a guy thrown out at the plate by 30, 40 feet. That stuff doesn't need to happen. Don't tell me it's just because you need to be aggressive. So I really like what Cora said about the base running earlier on. He said, listen, you know, we need to be aggressive, but we need to be smart. And a lot of that's going to be on the players because a lot of times the play is in front of them and they make that decision. And when he talks about the lineup, it's going to be Betts, Benny, Ramirez, done. When he talks about righties, lefties, he's very matter of fact. He knows how to communicate it to people. And that is a huge difference right away from what was here last year.
Well, I think he knows what he wants to do. That's the pretty simple thing. You know what I mean? To both of your points, he knows. He has a plan. He's been thinking about this for a long time. When I get this job, this is what I want to do and I'm going to implement it.
And that's confidence.
Yes, he's very confident. And you talk to him, he's big on analytics. He'll take them all into consideration, but he'll also do what he tells him. It's like you mentioned, you go, what do you think of when you hear this? Springer, Bregman, Altuve, Correa, right? Four of your out-of-the-shoot top hitters right there for the Astros, they're all right-handed.
Yep.
Right? There's no right-left matchup. It's just come and get us. We're going after you. You come after us. Here we go. And I think that's the mentality he wants by saying, I want to go Betts, maybe my best hitter, Benintendi, Hanley, if he's healthy and swinging and doing what he needs to do, and then Martinez. That's kind of sounds like what it's going to be like coming out of the chute.
He's instilling confidence in this team by the way he's talking and what he's doing. And I think, in turn, that's going to have the team, the players, have confidence in their manager, which I don't think was the case over the last couple of years.
Did anybody call?
Rob is in Marlboro. Rob, make Roach feel good.
Yeah, that's why I'm calling in, Roach. I hope you're doing well. Look, I agree unequivocally with the signing. Out of all fields, the way the deal's structured, that's not preclude them from going out and getting one of the big guys, Hopper or Machado, in the coming years. Roach, you're the man.
There you go.
Warms my heart.
There it is.
That's all I needed.
Peter in Jamaica Plain. Hi, Peter.
Load it on, hey, Pete. Come on, Pete.
Hey, how you doing? I don't see how any Red Sox fan couldn't love the signing of one of the best hitters in baseball. It's a total mystery to me. And this thing that really drives me crazy, I don't know if Felker started or what. How come 30 teams didn't bid on this guy?
Yes.
Okay. He's not a great fielder. He's a DH. So eliminate the National League, okay? He wants to go to a contender. So eliminate half of the American League. And then the people, they can pay him. I mean, he only had like four or five choices where he wanted to go. And, you know, he went to a team that's a contender that has a decent amount of money to pay him.
As far as we know, he had one contract offer. That would be one team he had a choice to go to, not four or five.
Well, he's not going to go to the Yankees. They don't need him, right?
Yeah.
How many teams could afford him?
I think the only team that would afford him. No, they could afford
all
him.
Of them. But all of these teams have money. There are many teams that choose not to spend their money, but they all have plenty of money. Regardless of their market size or where they're playing, they all have money. All
many
of the teams in baseball could spend their money.
How many teams
There's
where
too
they
many
are.
That don't.
How many teams where they are right now in their situation need a guy like that?
I don't understand this. You can't find a way to squeeze in a guy who is an offensive force, as you've called him?
Well, not for $100+ million. I don't think so.
Because you just don't want to spend the $100 million.
Yes.
Not because you can't.
Yes. Yes, that's one of the problems in baseball.
It is a problem in baseball.
You know,
there's too many teams that have plenty of money that don't spend any of it.
There should be a floor.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're going to say anything to me, it's because, and John Henry has said this too, we're giving all this money to the Marlins and to these supposedly smaller market teams like Tampa. There should be a floor to make them spend money. You know, how much money do you need to make? You know, right? Isn't that why are you in this game?
Well, why is there revenue sharing if you're not forced to
spend
the revenue?
Yes, you said it way better than I could.
What I would say, if you're John Henry, you're saying, why do I have to?
Yes.
Why am I spending and doing what I'm supposed to be doing as an owner to be good?
Yes, and putting money in your
pocket.
And
then I have to give you guys money too because you just want my money?
Right.
That would piss me off as an owner. It should make him mad, and I'm sure it does. It's not a good system. Too many teams are pocketing the cash and not putting it back into the players.
Agree.
That would be my biggest complaint if I were a player in the league. In this offseason that they've had, all these teams can afford these guys on the market. They just feel like, no, I'll put the money back in my own pocket. Why should I give it to you?
Yep.
617-779-0985. The ninth inning in baseball. According to Rich Eisen, there's an idea floating around in baseball about what you can do with your lineup in the ninth inning as a potential change to the sport. We'll get Roach's thoughts on that coming up next.
Sports Hub Headlines.
In under a half hour, Red Sox start playing some baseball. They will play Northeastern and Boston College today down in Fort Myers. Meanwhile, J.D. Martinez had his physical yesterday. He's reportedly going to hold a press conference today as long as the logistics work, because as of right now, there's a delay with the medical records and the deal hasn't been officially announced. John Heyman reporting that Martinez has a limited no-trade clause as part of that contract when everything becomes official. Celtics back at practice last night. Marcus Smart was out there, medically cleared. He's ready to play tomorrow night in Detroit. In other NBA news, Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that Kawhi Leonard has been medically cleared to return, but so far has decided not to play for the Spurs. Spurs head coach Greg Popovich told reporters yesterday that he'd be surprised if Leonard returned this season. Bruins remain off tonight, tomorrow night. They play Toronto on Saturday night. According to Pierre LeBrun, the Bruins remain in the mix for Ryan McDonagh, but the price needs to drop. And finally, USA women's hockey team won their first gold medal in 20 years, beating Canada in a shootout 3-2. Headlines brought to you by the Pride Motor Group, Washington's birthday sales event, presidential savings on all Chevy, Hyundai, and Kias on the Linway and Lynn, or visit PrideMotorGroup.com. I'm Nick Cattles. Next headlines coming up at 1 o'clock.
Hey, sports fans. Time for the weird,
Zolak,
the wild, Bertrand, and the unexpected.
How's his butt look?
Tight. It looks good.
Good.
Zolak and Bertrand. 98.5. The Sports Hub.
Here's the rule change. In the ninth inning,
ninth inning only. Not eighth inning, not seventh, not extras. Ninth inning only. You are allowed to send up to the plate as your first three hitters whoever you want.
Ooh.
Whether they have just played.
Oh, yeah.
So if 3-4-5 goes out in order in the eighth inning, ninth inning, your manager sends 3-4-5 right back out there. And then 6 goes, and 7 goes, and 8 goes. And if it goes into extra innings, they haven't figured out what it would be. Do you pick it up from the 8th, or do you pick it up from where it left off, that you recreate the batting order in the ninth inning that goes now for the rest of the game?
What do you make of that suggestion, Dan?
Hate it. No thanks.
Very negative today, Roche.
It seems ridiculous.
Like, okay, I understand the maybe a little twist there by putting up whomever you want in the bottom of the ninth inning, but a couple things. One, what if the guy is a no-hitter or a perfect game? And then how everything changes after that, going extra innings and beyond. I think it's a dumb idea. Don't like it. I don't mind some of the changes that I've heard, but I the biggest thing to me, and I've said this 1,000 times, is the best way to speed up the game is just to speed up what you do. Keep your one foot in the batter's box. We saw it for how long? 4 games, and they just let them do what they wanted to do. Get back on the mound, take the ball, and go.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple. That would shave 10, 15 minutes off a game.
Stop scratching your nuts, get on the mound, and throw the baseball.
Yes. Step out for 1 foot if you want. Look, go. Here we go. Quick. Pay attention to what you're doing, that's all.
I don't understand the push for, like, these drastic changes. You can help fix the game with some simple ideas, but you have to execute those ideas. And if the people up top in baseball, Manfred and his cronies, if they stick by some of these simple solutions, execute those, and if they're not executed, then actually punish those that aren't following the rules. If you do that, things will change. And I think it's the lack of commitment from the people in the game, not just the players, but the people that write the checks, the people that, you know, are part of the baseball offices that aren't doing enough to make sure that these things are followed through on and actually making concerted efforts to change the freaking game. You don't have to do something crazy outside the box to help address a lot of these problems. You don't.
Here's one that I would do. And I see it coming. Tom Verducci wrote an article about it, ways to improve the game, not necessarily speed it up. But I'm getting closer and closer, and I was never for this before, of letting the computer call the balls and strikes because of the inconsistency that we see within the strike zone and with the different umpires. Have an umpire back there, but just to let the computer do its work. I'm kind of getting there. That wouldn't bother me as much as some of the other stuff. I know it sounds drastic, and it scares you when you first hear it, but I nothing against umpires. I just think this is the strike zone. We've got computers now. We have all this technology that we can read the ball, the plane and everything else, where the batter's, you know, how tall the batter is, the size of the batter.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Strike zone. We got each strike zone matched up for each hitter. Let it go. Simple. And just let them guide the rest of the game, the umpires. Just a thought.
617-779-0985. Dan is in Hopkinton. Hey, Dan.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. It seems like every common sense idea that comes up gets shot down. And it's either from the Players Association, or you've got guys like Luma. You know, I know Felger doesn't get much leeway in this town, but I watched an interaction between Lou Maloney and I think it was Evan Drellick down in Florida last night with Felder on Sports Tonight or whatever his show is in the evening. And, you know, and Lou was just berating him because Felder said, you know, does the catcher really need to go out and go over the signs? I mean, really, does that really need to happen at this day and age at that level of the game? And Lou's argument was, oh, well, what do you want him taking 98-mile-an-hour fastballs when he doesn't know it's coming? You know, they're just shooting down bad ideas because they're on the player's side. You know, 30 seconds in between pitches is obscene. I mean, David Ortiz getting out of the batter's box, or Nomar with the batting gloves. It's like they could trim so much fat out of the game with two quick moves.
Right. They agree with you. They have to understand. The players need to understand that the game is going this direction. We're losing young players because of simple things like this. How about this nugget, Beetle? In the past decade, this is from Verducci, players have added an average of 2.6 seconds between pitches. That dawdling doesn't sound like much, but it adds up to 13 minutes of pure nothingness to the average game. Think about that. Guys, in the past 10 years, because stepping out, and yes, it was fun to watch when David would, you know, and Nomar would do this, everything else, but by doing what they do, they've added an extra 13 minutes to the game. The average time, what, last year was 3:08? So you bump that down to, you know, 3:55. There we go, thanks.
Two fifty-five.
Yes. Oh, it's Syracuse. You bump it under 3 hours, the average game, progress. 13 minutes. Simple. Things like that. But the players have to have the mentality, and that's going to be from Tony Clark all the way down. And I know it's a collective bargaining agreement, and they're looking for this, looking for that. But at some point, and this is where I agree with Felger, they're losing fans. And, you know, kids aren't watching. I mean, they're watching highlights and things like that. They're watching the postseason. But going to a game or watching a game on TV, they're losing that group that needs to continue baseball going in the way that's gone over the years.
And if the players aren't going to get on this, and I know Beetle said this the other day, that Manfred, you know, he does have some stroke here. He's got the stroke to make some of these changes. Hey, if the players don't want to get with it, baseball has to do what's best for baseball. And if it's finding guys, if it's laying down the hammer on them, you got to do what you got to do. Because if the players are going to be resistant to any kind of change, that is not going to help the game. It's going to continue to decline. And people are going to be even more frustrated as they have even more option as time goes along. So right. if you're a player, get with the program. If not, you're going to have to get fined. You're going to have to pay us money. And we'll put it towards charity or whatever. But until you figure this out and until you commit to this, nothing is going to change.
And why can the NFL change, right? They implement rules all the time to do different things to make the game better. The NBA implemented changes this season as far as the time the game is concerned to speed it up. Nobody, I haven't heard anybody complain about that. Nowhere. I see players complaining about speeding up, getting to the free throw line, getting the ball and shooting. You don't see that anywhere. But in baseball, it's a mortal sin if it suggests one thing, such as limit the number of mound visits.
617-779-0985, the phone number. Here on Zolak and Bertrand with Dan Roach and Nick Cattles in today for Zoe and Hardy. We'll be talking to Sean Grandy coming up at 1:20. And we'll get to some Celtic stuff later on in the 1 o'clock hour as well, including Marcus Smart, who spoke last night. All that on the way.
Zolak and Bertrand.
Are they aliens?
Zolak and Bertrand.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Dan Roach came into the day and he had a question for us, but he has not yet asked it. You ready to do it, Dan? You ready to tell us what it was?
Yeah, it's been a thought of mine for a while now.
Yeah?
When you look at the 2018 edition of the Boston Red Sox, and granted they're just beginning spring training games, they're just underway, but if I could say to you, and I did a poll on Twitter with this fun stuff, and sitting there saying, who's the most important person on this Red Sox team? Who would you say coming out of the chute? Who, in your mind, has to be the guy coming out to set the tone, lead this team in the right direction? But, you know, like different answers. You could say Price. You could say someone from the pitching staff, catcher. You name it. Who is the most important guy in your mind?
So this is about
and to me,
the start of the year or the entire year?
Start of the year and then all the way through.
Through October.
Yeah, through the parade.
Chris Sale.
Nick?
That's my pick.
David Price.
Okay. Mine, to me, it's not even close. And it's a little tricky question here.
Oh.
Okay.
Alex Cora. If this team is going to change, if this team is going to become a winning team when they need to win in the postseason, if the young guys are all of a sudden going to take that next step rather than digress, Betts, Bogarts, Benintendi, Jackie Bradley Jr., if Martinez is going to mix in with how they want to hit, how they want to play, and if Chris Sale and then David Price are going to set the tone, and if the bullpen is able to hold on and do what they need to do, it's all going to be set down here in spring training starting and then coming out of the chute by one guy. And I think it's critical for this year, and I think it's critical for years to come if they are successful at everything, optics, what we hear out of the clubhouse, what we see from this team, if there's progress and a step in the right direction, winning playoff series and going forward, I think it's for the future. It could be huge because of Machado, because of Harper, because of the potential superstars that are out there that could sign a contract, much like the Celtics now look that like to be that appealing team, that it's fun to play there, it's fun to win, you have a rabid fan base, all going in the right direction. I think it falls on one guy, and that's Alex Cora, this year to set the tone for 2018 and beyond.
If Price pitches like the dominant Price that we've seen pitch before, that answers a number of questions within that rotation, because I don't know if Pomerantz is going to be able to do what he did last year. I don't know what Porcello we're going to see. Are we going to see 2016 Porcello or 2017 Porcello? Is Eduardo Rodriguez ever going to be able to make you 27, 28 starts in a season? Chris Sale starts to wear down. If you have Price dealing, that helps, because if Sale declines a little bit towards the end of the year, if Price is surging, that helps. If the Red Sox are going to win the entire thing, it's going to be off of that rotation. It's going to be off of the pitching. They'll score runs. I think they'll score more runs than last year just with the addition of Martinez, but you don't want to slug your way to a World Series. It's very tough to do that. So I think if you have Price, who is locked in, he's totally engaged, he's performing on the mound, it not only helps that rotation, it helps the team, it helps your bullpen, because now you're able to lengthen things out with him. And I also think, to talk about the culture, which is what you're kind of driving at here, Rochie, with Cora, it's the culture. The Celtics have set a culture. The Patriots have their own culture. If they want this culture to succeed, if Price is successful, I think him maybe not being ecstatic, but him not getting in the way also helps that culture. And if Price buys in, then anyone can buy in. So I think Price is crucial to the success of this team.
Beetle?
Well, I think that it's Sale because, first of all, you need him to be what he was last year in the first half, but carry it all the way through. And you need that from him. You won 93 games without David Price at times last year, and you did that in large part at times because of Chris Sale. But they need Chris Sale to be better later in the year, and they need him to be better in the playoffs. Like, this entire year, and I think it's 1 and 1A, because I'd put Price second on this. The final outcome of this season will be determined in large part by those two guys.
I had an interesting conversation with Pedro Martinez about him this offseason, where Pedro thinks not necessarily cutting down the innings, and that will help, you know, if they can cut some pitching, you know, some pitches thrown here and there. He thinks it's all about Sale has to learn to control. If he can control his body and thus his emotions and not be so ramped up and just gunning after guys, if he can pitch a little bit better and not necessarily has to use his breaking stuff and everything else, but just be a little bit more economical and physically, he thought that he would have a chance to succeed as we went along, because he just thought he was so spent at the end of the year emotionally and physically, he needs to basically back off a little bit when he's going into certain situations. But rather than throwing a ball by a guy in a 1-2 count, you know, instead of throwing it 97 miles an hour, throw it, you know, 94 miles an hour with a little break to it and things like that, that he thinks that he can get through the season much better, much economically better than he did a year ago.
I think one of the biggest challenges for this pitching staff and for this organization and this coaching staff is this plan with Sale going to work. I'm fascinated to see if he's able to jump right into this plan and save something in the tank for late in the season, like Beatles talking about. Because if he can do that, if you can combine Sale being able to give you what he gave you the first 3 or 4 months of the season through the entirety of this 2018 season and a productive, healthy David Price, that 1-2 combination in the rotation is going to be absolutely unbelievable to watch.
And that's how you're going to compete against the Yankees, right? That's the way you're going to have to go after them.
I mean, Rochi, even with the manager that a lot of these players I don't think love, they still won 93 games in the regular season.
So think about
last
what a manager
year.
They could play for.
Right.
What that could mean to this team.
But I also think that the manager, the actual impact on wins and losses
I think it's huge.
Is minimal.
Huge. I think you're totally wrong.
It might be like 3 or 4 games at the most.
What's that, 97 games? 98 games? That's a different team than a 93-win team. I guarantee you. In baseball.
Yeah, but do you know what's a much bigger impact is David Price if he's healthy.
Well, yes.
Or Chris Sale if he pitches well in the second half.
No, not necessarily. Not necessarily.
Yes, necessarily.
I'm talking about the total body of work as you get ready for the postseason.
Because even if Cora sucks in game, I still prefer him over John Farrell. John Farrell sucked in game, too.
If they win 97 games this season, are you buying in, Rochi?
That's a much different team. Now, keep in mind,
don't they have to win a postseason series?
You're going
to
get 18 wins out of Tampa, right?
Yeah, that team.
They've dramatically changed.
But isn't it all about, unfortunately for this team, it's all about what they do in October. And I say unfortunately because I don't think they're going to get many breaks if they're playing a lot of winning baseball by a lot of people. But they've made that bed, and they're going to have to lie in that bed until the postseason. I think if they win...
See, I think it depends on how they play. Like, if they play like we saw the Houston Astros play, that's a totally different team. Think about how the Astros played last year.
True, but I still think there's going to be a chunk of people, and that chunk is going to be somewhat significant, saying, okay, it's great, it's great, they're fun to watch, but if they get swept in the first round, it's all for naught. If they can't get past a playoff series, I don't care how much fun they had, I don't care how much fun they were to watch, it's a results-based business, and for the third straight season, they couldn't get it done in the postseason. I think that is going to be the indelible mark that is left if they fail to get through at least a round, at least a round.
Yeah, don't disagree with that at all. But I just think, as you see the body of work, I think that's what's going to set the tone for what this team can do in the future.
617-779-0985. Your calls coming up after headlines with Nick.